Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're joined today in the studio by Melbourne Social Equity Institute Community Fellows Mike Collins and Kelly Whitworth. And Kelly Whitworth is also, as some of our listeners know, is also a presenter on 3CR as well. So yeah, they're joining us today because they actually have been, they're part of launching some new research, which is basically, and they're going to be having an event about this kind of research. And basically, this research kind of draws on the Bendigo kind of street kind of occupation. And, you know, basically they've kind of found some, you know, lessons that can be kind of drawn from it for, in terms of housing activists and also policymakers. And they're also going to be launching the research next Tuesday. And I'll give them an opportunity to kind of give details about it. But, yeah, good morning, Mike and Kelly, for being on our program.
Good morning, Jacob and Chloe.
Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess to kind of start off, without going into kind of long detail, because obviously we want to talk a bit more about the kind of research. But just for our listeners, can you, I guess, start off by, I guess, giving a bit of, an overview, I guess, of the Bendigo Street occupation that took place in 2016 that very much kind of shaped, this research?
Yeah, it was a really big event that went down in 2016, as you say. It went for about 8 months, kicked off around Easter, and I was a member of the Homeless Persons Union at the time, which was a peer grassroots kind of collective advocating for, yeah, legal and political and human rights of people experiencing homelessness in Melbourne and Victoria. And so we have a bit of a network there. We have a lot of friends who have been homeless. I've been homeless myself. And we got wind that these people that we know had been squatting, had been occupying a house in this street called Bendigo Street in Collingwood. And they were turfed out by government people about 2 or 3 days into their stay without any recourse to any support for housing elsewhere. They were just, yeah, unceremoniously turfed out. And they'd become aware that there was like multiple houses on this street that were empty. And this is all tied up with the East-West Link, which was a major transport project that was supposed to be going ahead, you know, for a number of years prior to that, which was cancelled. And the Liberal government had compulsorily acquired all these houses around Clifton Hill, Parkville, Collingwood, all around the joint. And then they were left empty when the project was cancelled. And some of the houses were given to the Salvation Army and the Magpie Nest, which is a charity housing organisation. And 6 months after that announcement, the houses were still empty, despite them claiming they were going to give them to those most in need, that is, you know, people that were homeless. And so one day we decided, you know, after a few weeks of planning, that we were going to occupy one of the houses to draw attention to this issue and to draw out people responsible for the housing, who was managing them, who owned them, what was happening to these houses in a homelessness crisis. And we were there for 8 months and we just planned to be there one day.
8 months. And that was from, so that was from, that occupation lasted from March 30th to November 2nd in 2016, right?
Yep.
Before being attacked by armed police. Thanks for that background. What can you tell us about the research that has been undertaken with the Melbourne Social Equity Institute, an informal urbanism hub, drawing on the experience of the occupation?
Well, I work in local government and I work a lot in housing policy. I saw what was happening at Bendigo Street at the time, had some connection with it, with talking to the HPUV at the time, and, you know, being a supporter in my own way. I didn't work in the local government that Bendigo Street was in, but and I kind of watched what happened and thought, this is actually, it's a very significant event that happened. It was highly unusual in Australia for activists to actually not just protest, which is kind of started off with a protest outside the houses, but it's like they went in. And they went into the house on the street and right across Melbourne. There was an awful lot of attention, a lot of media attention, a lot of political attention put on this. And it felt like a really important event and series of events to understand. And coming from a government perspective, being in government and in local government, I thought, well, what actually happened kind of on the ground? These things happen and then people go on with their lives. But I thought it was really important that we actually understand what was happening on the ground to everybody involved, and from that, other things to kind of understand for the future. So out of that, I had been a little bit connected to the University of Melbourne Social Equity Institute. They're a fantastic little institute within the University of Melbourne. They do probably some of the most important kind of research, and their research is really about bringing people who are not necessarily academics in to actually do and be able to tell the stories that are often unheard stories and difficult stories to tell. And out of that was a suggestion that maybe coming from government, I could have a perspective on this event, but I really wanted to kind of work with somebody who's actually there and on the ground, and I knew Kelly a bit, and we just came up with this proposal to work together on this and to kind of go on a journey between ourselves. You know, a bit of an odd couple we are, but, you know, we kind of coming from our different perspectives on to understand what happened. So that was the kind of genesis of it, and then we started talking to people and reading a lot and talking a lot to each other as well to understand what happened.
And going into that, I guess, because I guess part of your kind of launch, you've one of the kind of things about it is that, I guess, in terms of the kind of conclusions, I guess, of this sort of research, and basically, I guess, what can you, I guess, tell us about, you know, some of the lessons that have, I guess, been revealed for this research, which you say is lessons that can be applied for both, you know, housing activists and also policymakers in regards to kind of housing and other things.
Yeah, I guess I'll pick up on a couple just on the local government kind of end. I wanted it just not to be a piece of, you know, research that is interesting but isn't useful. We wanted to come up with, as you say, some recommendations out of our insights from the research. One of them is, I think, in terms of looking at how local government operates, is really, with the best will in the world of people who work in local government, be they elected councillors or the officers in the organisation, it's sometimes really hard to understand what's going on when you're kind of dealing with them. They're their own language, their own kind of rules. The way decisions get made is really hard to understand sometimes. So that communication to people in their communities, and especially when there's a point where there's an action, there's activism, to understand, well, what are the ways in which things can happen or things can happen better by understanding the kind of processes of government. So that's one thing we think they can do a lot better at doing.
And to add to that, I guess, for actually council people to get out of their big buildings and their offices and to actually get down to the site of the action, wherever it may be occurring, and speak to people that are on the ground, because we also, you know, as, you know, just adding to what Mike said, you know, one of the big issues was, and for us during Bendigo Street, we didn't know how all those processes worked. We didn't know who to reach out to. They didn't communicate it well. So yeah, they really need to get out of those buildings and get down to where the people are and really hear from what's happening in their community, especially if their goals are aligned. You know, if local government does have a policy in place to support housing for all, they really need to reach out to grassroots activists on the ground and support them in many different ways, as the report speaks to as well. There's many practical things that they can do, things like helping them with media resources. Like the councils have a really big, well-funded communications team. They could provide resources to help activists understand how they can handle the media better, and that maybe they can liaise between, you know, state government, federal government, and activists on the ground. And they could implement things like a well-being plan, so activists don't burn out. Like Bendigo Street was really taxing on a lot of us for a long time afterwards. It took a lot out of us. They could do things like that to support activists' well-being, you know, when their goals are aligned. What else, Mike?
I think the other kind of insight I think we had from talking to local government people, from talking to people who were involved in the occupation, was that how it's crucial to get the support of the elected officials. Local government's full of a lot of reason why people work in local government, and I guess I'll count myself in on that, is they're often passionate and care and want to have good support for the community. They want change to happen. But the workers inside local government aren't necessarily the ones that have the power to really kind of drive the resources and get the big voice to be heard of local government in terms of kind of support. It's the elected officials. Now, they're often local councillors. They've got, you know, they're representing 20,000 people. They're only paid a part-time wage. They're really sometimes really taxed in terms of how much time and energy they have to give attention to things. So a strategy for getting at least one, but two or three or four councillors who understand your issue can really be critical, because they're the ones making the decisions in the chamber sometimes, you know, for to push resources or to really, you know, make a strong stand with government, with state government, etc. So that was a key thing. I think we've really understood that what happens at in Bendigo Street in relation to Yarra Council at the time is Yarra Council had, coming up to the occupation, had said these houses should be social housing. They were advocating for that, and then they kind of backed away once the occupation happened, and so that pressure on state government to support kind of ebbed away, and I think there was an opportunity there that could have been there could have been a better outcome. The really sad thing that's happened with Bendigo Street, with the houses that were occupied, is they ended up pretty much, I think, nearly all, but the vast majority of them, were sold on the open market for upwards $900,000, $1 million. That in itself, I think, it could have been something different. There could be housing there today in that street for people in our community who really need it, and we know there's a lot of people in our community really need affordable housing.
Yeah. And you've given, I guess, a great kind of summary, I guess, of the kind of research, and I'm actually, you know, I'm looking forward to kind of the launch of it on Tuesday. But outside the law, this research, I was wondering if Kelly could just give a bit of a plug to this. But there is also a crowdfunding campaign to create a documentary film covering the 2016 Bendigo Street. And just wondering if you wanted to just give it a bit of a plug, just give you an opportunity to give it a kind of a bit of a plug, because I do think it's kind of an important kind of crowdfunding campaign.
It is, and it just adds to our project, you know, because this was a really big event that happened, and if multiple people involved can tell the story from their perspective, well, that's great, you know, the more the merrier. And so one of the occupants, Jasmine Barzani, has created a little teaser film, a 20-minute film called Bendigo Street, and it's about the campaign from her perspective, and it's a great little film, and you can find it online. And, yeah, so she's in the process of raising funds to make a feature about it. Have you seen the teaser, Jacob?
Oh, I haven't gotten around to watching it, sorry.
It's fantastic. Mike's seen it.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
Stunning.
It's
stunning.
It's stunning. The, you know, you can read words on paper, but the energy, there was, you know, there was a lot of great footage taken at the time. I think the energy that it captures in terms of what was happening at the time is, it's really important. I think that there's a audio visual document as well of the occupation. I think, because I think it was a really important historical event in terms of housing justice and in Melbourne.
Yeah, I think they've raised $6,000 so far, and we need to raise 20. So we're encouraging people to get behind that fundraiser. But we do need more researchers like you. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you are trying to recognise grassroots activism as, you know, something that is actually creating change. And with our massive housing crisis, I mean, it would have been a great legacy to have Bendigo Street turn into a huge public housing estate.
I must mention, though, that like there were a lot of victories that came out of the campaign, and people that were very vulnerable on the street did end up getting public housing permanent elsewhere, not on Bendigo Street, but elsewhere in the community. So that's a huge win, and we are so proud of that. Those people are continuing to live, their survivors today, and they have secure, affordable public housing. It just doesn't happen to be on Bendigo Street, and that's one of the tragedies about the occupation is that, those houses, most of them ended up getting sold for over $1 million. You know, there was it's very sad, it's a missed opportunity there for council to really do something.
Yeah.
I'll ask the kind of final question. I guess thanks for both of you for coming on our program, especially coming in live, because, yeah, we haven't been able to do much live interviews of recently in the past several years. And I guess, do you have any, final comments you'd like to make? And also, I guess, more importantly, just for our listeners, giving us details of the launch, which we'll definitely attach details of the launch when we podcast this program, which will be available, I think, on Saturday. Yeah, but just for our listeners right now, can you give us details of the launch and any final comments that you'd like to make?
Well, the launch is happening at 6 o'clock next Tuesday, 2nd of May, at the University of Melbourne, and we're just really thankful again for our support from the Melbourne Social Equity Institute and from the Informa Research Hub, which is based there in the Melbourne School of Design. It's you can book to watch it online. Fortunately, that there's a lot of interest, so it's booked out in terms of actually being there present. But if you look up the Melbourne Social Equity Institute, Bendigo Street, there's you'll find a booking link there, and also there will be a link to the actual research itself. It should be up by the weekend. So we want people even to have a quick read of it even before the event, but certainly we encourage people maybe to watch online. We'll try to make it interesting. We're going to have a great panel.
Yeah, we've got a great panel. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Of who are the panel, Mike? Should we say?
Yeah, Anne Barton, who worked in Yarra Council during this period. And Meg Fitzgerald from the Fitzroy Legal Centre is also there, and Pat
Cepoloni,
who's very much involved in the occupation as well, will be there, and we'll be having a conversation about the research, but also about the actual events as well. And we're just really encouraging people and online as well to put in questions, because we want this to hopefully stir up kind of questions, debates, interest in not just research but actual action and future action and how that can be the most effective.
Yeah, great. Really inspiring. Thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thanks again. All right. So we'll go play a quick announcement. We're just interviewing Mike Collins and Kelly Whitworth about this launch of this new kind of research drawing on the Bendigo kind of street kind of occupation. I'll just go play a quick announcement and it'll be time to go into the Green Left Activist Calendar. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.